you know, like Elon Musk, you know, and I remember being in a room with him and it was him and five of his kids. When I was in this room with him and there was like nobody there, I was just there and I was thinking like, okay, this is like a time when other people would be like, let me approach and ask him a question. And I was standing there and I was just like, couldn't help but like just looking at me like, gosh, he just looks like an average guy. You know, there's nothing like evoking, like impressive about what he looked like or this idea of this person that I felt like people had like created of him in their mind. And I realized then it's like, you know, what I'm really impressed of all the things he says is that he's always like, this is the stuff I want to do. And I'd like for you to try to also do it. I was like, okay, what he's saying is, oh, this is the things that seem to be important and you could try to build this too. I think those are the parts that was impressive. I was like, okay, like how does he build things? He built things by connecting with people. What is he really good at? He's not the most impressive engineer on the planet. He's not the most impressive. He didn't even really understand AI until people I knew like helped him understand it. So what he's really great at is knowing how to bring people together and have conversations to learn from each other.
You are now entering the information stream, a physical and digital world. No matter where you live or where you are, a device and connection brought you here, where you and I now interact. Together, we will challenge our basic assumptions and approach to life in the 21st century. Together, we will change the world. Welcome to 21st Century Freak, and I'm your host, Edward Veeam. Welcome to 21st Century Freak. I'm your host, Edward Veeam, and today I'm joined by Noreen Nayar, somebody I've wanted to have a longer conversation with ever since I met her. And I'd love to give you guys a very specific bio of what she does and what she's done in this world so far. But honestly, I think this conversation is part here because I want to figure that out myself. And I know you've kind of are in a mesh between finding good people to work on tech and values that combine into this legacy where we can provide for humanity, we can provide for the planet without affecting future generations and hopefully actually to support future generations. And I'm curious to find out exactly how that looks in this conversation and what you've done and how you've gotten to that point. But first of all, very welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I typically begin with a short meditation.
Okay, great.
So we can close our eyes and take a few deep breaths. And if we open our eyes, the world streams in. And it's in this stream of consciousness, or the information stream where the listeners are, where we're all the same. We're not very different, you and I. Yeah, your name is Noreen, my name is Edward. But more than anything else, we're the same. And we're pretty fucking amazing. And I always like to remind myself of that I'm amazing, you're amazing, we're all amazing because we share that quality. And typically how I begin the conversation is with two questions. Who are you and why are you here?
Okay, is that what you're asking me now? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Hi, I'm Noreen. So my friends call me Nora. And yeah, I've been going by Noreen more lately, But some of my old friends still call me Nora. So it's like a fluid ownership of both. and you know, Nora is very close to Nura, like North in Swedish. So a lot of older Swedish people sometimes like say it, and it's so cute. I like it. Yeah, they're like Nora, you know, like so cute. Nora. Yeah, I'm here because you asked me to come, and I was like, yes. And I'm more present on here as in this room. And I think, you know, I'm grateful to be here on this planet. You know, I feel like today I told you I talked to my dad after some time, and also texted my mom, and I have a lot of gratitude for both of them for being in my life and, you know, getting to where I am in my life. I think it's always about the things that people did or didn't do for you. I think they all serve a purpose. And when you own that, when I owned that, I think I gained a lot of gratitude for just being alive and present in myself as me versus someone else. I think, yeah, so I think that's why I'm here, is that I have been gifted life and ability to take on a lot of things I wanted, and ended up somehow here in Sweden via living in many other places in the world.
Yeah. really nice to hear you speak. I like the fact that the giggle from how people pronounce your name, Nora. I can sense just a good vibe there. it's also, I like the fact that you're mentioning your parents and like being grateful for that. I was having this conversation with a person just yesterday where it's like he'd kind of forgotten that his parents loved him, that he didn't realize that what they do is for him. And I think it's easy to forget how powerful it is to remember that our parents love us and to be grateful for that. So it's sending me a little reminder. So I appreciate that.
That's great. Should I be asking you the same question?
Sure.
Okay, so why are you here and what's your name?
Is that what it is? Who are you and why are you here?
Who are you?
Yeah, so my name is Edward, and I'm a 21st century freak. And I'm here because I was super curious to talk to you, because like the first time I spoke to you, you were like listening to Kanye. It was just like the stream of consciousness flowing out of your mouth, like 1,000 different ideas, different people you'd met, and how you link together all these different ideas. And I was just fascinated. I thought like that, and the way you strung things together, I was like, oh, wow, this is a unique perspective. And I definitely felt like this is somebody that you don't talk to every day. So you felt very kind of unique and special in a very Nora way. And so I wanted to figure out more, and so I'm here today to do just that and kind of figure out exactly why you are this fascinating character and why I felt this urge to speak more to you. Sorry, if you want to give me positive feedback, which is typically what I do, you can, but I almost want to just jump straight into the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like giving you positive feedback for liking what I stand for. So
yeah, but that's very true. So maybe I should give you a little. So who am I? Well, as I mentioned, I think I'm really looking for like human connection in this room, in the conversation with you, but also to how do you hold a decent conversation where you can actually understand the 21st century better and understand why today is different from all other human history and why we have the potential to change the world. And I'm here to figure that out. And I think when I find fascinating people like you, that's how I get one step closer. And so to kind of begin this trail that I have started to set out in my mind, I know that you were born in Bangladesh and then you moved to California.
Right.
Do you identify as kind of like a Bangladeshian or as an American, as both?
I think I would say I totally see myself as a third culture kid. I don't even know if it's third culture, just many culture kid. You know, I think I was talking to a bunch of TCKs, as we call ourselves, people who were born one place, raised another, speak a few different languages growing up, and have parents in different countries and people, you know, my dad has lived in Asia my whole life, predominantly in Singapore. And now, as I mentioned, he's in Myanmar. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up with my mom and my grandparents in California for a large amount of my life. But I always had this connection to Asia because, you know, my dad would visit and, you know, we would have these like discussions about the difference in culture and the way things are there versus here as in when I was in the United States.
Mm. How old were you when you moved from Bangladesh to the US?
I think like around 7 or 8. It's like always like a blur because first there was some travels. I did so much traveling when I was a kid. So it's really a blur when I just remember it was second grade. I don't know how old that is, but okay. It was second grade. Yeah. So that's all I remember.
And when you like landed in the US, were you excited or were you sad?
I mean, I traveled already so much. And I don't think, you know, when you first land somewhere, you realize that could be a place you're going to be in the past, wherever you were, might be just the past, you know. And so it's a kind of interesting when you're a kid, at least for me, I just remember the first experience I have of where I lived in the suburb in Southern California was looking at mountains. You know, in Asia, I hadn't never seen. It's interesting because I think I had been in mountains, but it had been to mountains in like Pakistan at some point, but like a mountain region, but I'd never seen them. I realize now there were probably mountains, but it was dark and I never saw them.
Yeah.
But I remember that's my first experience of moving to where I did in California was seeing the mountains. And I remember the road, and I don't know why that memory is there, but it's always like interesting how it connects to all the places that I'm attracted to now. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. And mountains are awesome. Like they have, I don't know. I think it's something within like the whole human genome that like when you see a mountain, you feel at home. It's like, okay, there's something at the peak. There's something at the bottom. There's something in the journey that is going to tell me something.
Exactly.
But I'm curious too, like all the traveling when you were young, was that because your parents were working internationally?
Well, my dad did a lot of work in Singapore for, you know, I think throughout his 20s and 30s. And so I think that was one of the reasons. And then, yeah, because my dad was always in business. He's a very entrepreneurial person. And there was a lot of travel in his, you know, early business years where he was traveling all the time. And I think that's why. I mean, it was, like I said, I was so young. I just remember I'd been to so many planes already. I'd been to Singapore. I'd been to like India, Pakistan, like before I was 5. So it was kind of, you know, I don't think I remember the plane ride or anything. You know, if it was my first plane ride, I may have like a real, you know, monumental memory of moving to California. But I recognize I probably don't have that because it wasn't my first airplane ride or anything like that.
Mm. Well, and like, so one thing I picked up on the first time was like that you're so social. And then I also mentioned to you that I was reading your blog earlier today. And you mentioned there that like one of your favorite books when you were younger was The Idiot by Dostoevsky.
Right, right.
And there was this quote where he kind of, you know, pulls out this idea of like, people that are super smart typically don't know how ignorant they are. And people that learn too fast are probably ignorant of what they're missing out on as they assume that they know the knowledge. Mm-hmm. And like truly wise people kind of take their time and observe and question before they assume they know anything. Mm-hmm. And I was curious, like if I ask you now, can you tell me right away why that book was so special to you and like why that...
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's so interesting because I think I was such a deep and deep thinker as a young child because I grew up with my grandparents. And I think that plays a huge role in how I became aware of the world. And, you know, I wasn't ever told this is a kid's book or this is an adult's book. And so when I read, when I read that book, The Idiot, when I was young, and I revisited it later in my life. It was interesting because the message is still very much the same, and its power still holds for this, you know, our generation and many generations, unfortunately, probably after us, is this idea that, you know, I think the book is so great because the character is, quote, the idiot, unquote. Mm. But then in the end, it's the idea that's the person that's probably the wisest because they're observing the world around them. And I think that's somehow still relevant to our time. So yeah, I think that message from that book is still like a great, you know, great one to go back to. And I think that's why it's called, it is a classic. Mm. You know, so there's certain books from the past that I think have been considered classics that maybe in our era, we would be like, maybe it's not really a classic. It's kind of a mediocre book about time, you know, but because he wrote from a very place, I mean, the author himself was such a passionate person with such complex life experiences. I think he talks about the psyche, the human psyche, instead of, it's not about the color of the person or the religion or anything. It's about the struggles of society to recognize true brilliance versus the brilliance we, you know, put a hashtag on or, you know, look at. And I think character also, I think that book is a real proud, like a prime example of the value of character and how that has a way of showing a lot of what matters also in a person's development. And so, yeah, I still think that he's an amazing writer, and he was prolific for his time. And I think he's still prolific for our times. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, classic pieces, what they do well is they really do illuminate the human psyche in such a way that it remains timeless. Like no matter how far into the future or how far into the past you look, like when they really nail it, the kind of struggles in the human experience, that's when the books really like resonate and they stay in our libraries. It's the same with, like, I'm thinking of like the Greek philosophers. When I think about classic books, like, and I think of like Plato, I think about Aristotle and Socrates, right, and what made them so great. Okay. And this certainly is some kind of like first mover advantage. they kind of had the opportunity to have these ideas first. And of course, that's why we're going to remember their names. But even when you start like reading Plato, that's what I thought was so interesting, was that like, even I, as like a young person in the 21st century reading Plato, start to realize like the things that he's talking about are still the things that we try to talk about today. And we try to figure out today, like, what is truth? What is justice? How can we treat each other well? And how can we create enough order so that we all keep in line, but also not so much that we start controlling each other, and it where it turns into almost manipulation, where you're forcing people into a certain corner. But that's enough of me ranting. as the idiot in school then, that you also mentioned in the blog that you were like pendling between being the loved student and the hated student from your teachers. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming the hated part was that you like to question things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that now that I'm older, I recognize that, you know, it's so sad because I think in the United States, a lot of, you know, I went to private school in Bangladesh, and then it was English private school. And then I moved to the United States, and that's actually the, you know, coming back to what you asked me, I think the most important thing I recognized was moving to California, the shift in my education. You know, I was young, but I knew when I was like around people who just didn't know normal information, you know, and I now look back on it, I realize the expectation of information that you need to learn to become a primary school teacher in the United States is so low. And the emphasis on geography and cultural understanding of other people is so low as well. Hmm. That the idea that anyone was even able to like be a decent teacher, you know, I'm sorry to say it that way, is almost like admirable. And there were some amazing teachers I had. You know, my social studies teachers were all amazing. They were all predominantly Jewish. And so I learned a lot about the Holocaust and they played a huge role in, I think, my compassion for a lot of, you know, the history of, you know, the Jewish communities of Europe, even, because I learned so much about it through these amazing teachers of mine. That being said, I remember my first teachers, there was just so many things that you look back on and you go, of course they couldn't answer this. They were upset because they couldn't answer those questions because they couldn't even understand why those questions should exist. Because if you don't know, you know, if you don't know about the world outside, you know, I'll still remember having a British accent, moving to the United States, and having to take English as a second language class.
Oh my God.
You know, like it's just so, I always come back to that thought, is that it's so, I cannot imagine that limited understanding of how people speak language, even the English language. Mm. So I think in that respect, you know, going from being like top of my class in Bangladesh as a young person, and then feeling like I could barely make it to finishing in a good way, I realized later in my life, it's because the system, at least when I was there, I can't speak of the, you know, system now. And I know there's lots of people with ideas and critique of the American, you know, education system now, but I also think I haven't researched it. I don't know where its real state is, but my experience as a young child, I just think it, you know, I look back on it now and I realize like, wow, I mean, they really had such low level tools. They weren't given much education on how to teach, really. They're kind of just, you don't really need much back then to just become a teacher, I think. And, you know, I remember my mom telling me sometimes when I was finishing university that, you know, I should go into teaching. And when I looked into it, and she was like, yeah, it's so easy to teach. You should teach. And I thought, that's so sad that it's that easy to teach.
Yeah.
You know, these are the people that influence the development of your society. They should be paid more and they should be educated more.
Yeah. And exactly. Like, given how important teachers are, also the fact that they're kind of diminishing in status in society is crazy. Mentioning the Greeks again, I think it's so interesting because they allowed their most intellectual people to educate the kids.
Yeah.
Where did we get it wrong? Where, okay, let's pay our teachers less. Let's make sure they're not too knowledgeable, or it's fairly easy to get a certificate so that, you know, at least there's some demand to be a teacher. It's like, it's very sad. Yes. And I think like what's inspiring me though, is the fact that this information stream, this local to global connection in the 21st century, where with a device and connection, and of course, to a certain extent, the right environment to inspire this kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. But once you have a certain few pieces in place, self-education today is like at such a new radical level. There's a problem where, like, in a way our devices are dopamine. It's the new crack, you know, it's just dopamine driven. And so a lot of kids don't know how to deal with it. If we can somehow overcome that hurdle and we can give people the right kind of systems and models to allow each person to become their own little teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I think people play a huge role in the way we develop in general. I was really lucky because, my grandmother lived with us and she had a master's in education. So I think I had school in the sense of going to school, you know, a public school in the United States in California. And then I would come home and have my own schooling by my grandmother. And because my grandmother had a master's in education, she was always asking me those like very philosophical questions. And there's this feedback of the why I'm thinking this, that a good teacher does, I think, has value for child development as well. And I do think that an iPad or an iPhone or, you know, any other tablets and such in the future, they have a serving, but I also think like there's so much value from interacting with people that is really important and fundamentally crucial to the development of our actual progression as a species in regards to understanding how to connect with each other, despite maybe how we don't, you know, see eye to eye, or have, you know, we have different ways of saying words and thinking. And I think, yeah, I think it is those soft skills, as they call it now, but I think it's more like, you know, these people skills, and that are still going to be important, and they're going to be important more and more if a lot of these technology companies continue to hold the strategy of the future, because their intention is obviously rooted in automation, not perhaps always for the betterment of our species, you know, because I think if anything we do, if we were like, how do we create X so we can make people better to each other and smarter, then I think we would be building different versions of the world. And I, you know, like the planet itself doesn't need us as a species, but we need the planet. And I think we need each other. Mm. And I'm not sure if a lot of the current leaders today are actually asking those questions in a good way. I think they're like telling us what they think, but you know, like a lot of, you know, like Elon Musk, you know, is he a really healthy person? I don't really think so. You know, I've met him in real life. I remember being in a room with him, and it was him and five of his kids. I think it was five. Yeah. Now he has six, I think. It was like, I think it's all boys. And it was like, they were all sitting there, and it was with his like kids, like, I don't know, like assistant. I don't know. I don't want to say babysitter, but like, you know, and he was there, and it was just me in his room with his family. And, you know, he's super a huge advocate for education. And I was really impressed, because I had some friends then working on education for young people. And like Elon Musk was looking at that, and he was also looking at a startup I was helping with, a product they were developing on how to create like education to make learning programming fun. And it was like this tangible, like wooden kind of box object. It was really cool. I think that, you know, when I was in this room with him and there was like nobody there, I was just there, and I was thinking like, okay, this is like a time when other people would be like, let me approach and ask him a question. And I was standing there, and I was just like, couldn't help but like just looking at me like, gosh, he just looks like an average guy. You know, there's nothing like evoking, like impressive about what he looked like, or this idea of this person that I felt like people had like created of him in their mind. And I realized then, it's like, you know, what I'm really impressed of all the things he says is that he's always like, this is the stuff I want to do, and I'd like for you to try to also do it. And I think, to me, I don't think he's someone who's like knows more in the world. I think he's just trying more in the world. And I think he's someone who's brave enough to attempt to allow smarter people than him support him getting to do those things. And I think that's part of a way of learning as well.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that part of learning, the part of connecting with people that may know something different than you and may know more or maybe know less, I think that's more important. Like, I don't think it's about, like I said, I don't particularly think he's like the healthiest person I ever met, or, you know, the most impressive person I laid eyes on. However, I found, as I was like looking at him from like a observation, not as someone I admired, but just as a person that was doing things in the world, I was like, okay, what he's saying is, oh, this is the things that seem to be important, and you could try to build this too. I think those are the parts I was impressed. I was like, okay, like how does he build things? He built things by connecting with people. What is he really good at? He's not the most impressive engineer on the planet. He's not the most impressive. He didn't even really understand AI until people I knew like helped him understand it. So what he's really great at is knowing how to bring people together and have conversations to learn from each other. Mm. And I think, like you're talking about, this goes back to Plato's days, is that philosophers brought together people and they would talk, but there would be discussion with them and their like these students they had. and their students would question them. And then the whole art of like this growing to be a philosopher was, at some point, you're, you know, the person you're mentoring or like would at some point say to you, wow, you and I disagree and I'm not okay with your version, but I'm impressed because you've thought through this really well.
Yeah.
And you're now a philosopher. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you have reached your spot.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and I think that's so critical because like what's interesting is like now we're hailing Socrates because, oh, look at what he showed us, what we can do with questions. Because Socrates, what's so interesting about him, he never tried to say that he knew anything. He just knew how to keep asking questions to prove that actually whoever you are in front of me, you don't know shit. Because when I start asking deeper and deeper questions, you don't have the answers you think you have. Mm-hmm. Going back to the idiots. Ha, you don't actually know so much. And not only that, he was killed for asking these questions. So there actually is a point where society in itself, because we want to preserve order and maintain the status quo, we are afraid to start asking these questions. And we're afraid of inspiring people to do that work. But at the same time, I have this like deep feeling that most people are good people. And so why is it then that we create these systems that don't seem to want to bring out the good?
Is that a question?
I'm not sure. But maybe I can tie it together like this then. Another thing I know about you is that your brother started programming at like 6 years old and is just like an ultra savant smart guy.
I think so. I mean,
let's just give that to him. Yeah. Let's do it as hard.
Yeah, let's do it.
And in education, you're kind of realizing that there's something missing in education that doesn't allow us to grasp that, wait, what we're trying to do is improve people and the planet. That's the main goal. And then you also kind of grew up with this younger brother who's really good at technology, and maybe you kind of, in a unique way, realize that, oh, wait, building programs are, it's so scalable. Technology maybe is a way to scale this people and planetary goal. So I'm curious then, so you're asking these questions, you're kind of surrounded by technology. Like, how would you formulate that this like fusion brought you into a room with Elon Musk? Like, because what happened after high school?
I mean, I think I like how it's like, how did this all end up with you in a room with, I mean, I ended up in a room with Elon Musk by just chance. I was in this conference where people were putting it together. It was like an applied rationality conference of like, not, I think it was effective altruism. That's what it was. It's called effective altruism. And there was like press that wanted to interview him or something, and someone needed to stay. I was like, I'll stay in, because I could tell they were like, you know, doing the thing where they were trying to use some sort of applied rationality to like come up with the reasoning of what needs to happen. I was like, I'll just stay in. Let's just drop the mental, like whatever intellectual obsessive overthinking they're doing. I'm just going to be right here because I'm more of a doer. And I think they were just kind of people that maybe, you know, they put too much thought into the process than doing the process. So
it was like intellectual masturbation, basically. Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, I think, you know, I don't want to say that. I'll say at that moment, I just remember saying, hey, I'll stay here. And then everyone's like, okay, that made sense for some reason. So they said, sure. And, but yeah, I think that's all that happened there. But I think when it comes to, yeah, I mean, even that, of course, you're right. It's kind of like life is a porridge almost, you know, like all these things come together and then you have this unique porridge of your own making. And absolutely, I think, you know, one, being the oldest of five from a family, you know, with my dad doing business, I was always kind of interested in the past of my own family and, you know, on my mom's side too. You know, even though Bangladesh is a very poor country, you know, we have a lot of legacy in the things we've done. You know, we have ancestral lineage. We have, you know, generations of tea garden, for example, on my mom's side. And so, there's a lot of discussion in my mind of like, what does the legacy of tomorrow look like? You know, the legacies that maybe positive, negative, that lead us to where we are today. You know, people that, you know, when you're maybe getting that legacy, whether it's a business or a concept of that mindset of thinking about the future, for your, you know, your siblings and your future generation, you have to wonder, like, how will that look like in the future that's advancing in such a technological space as we are today? And absolutely, I think you have to integrate technology into scaling whatever ideas you have today if you plan to have it be accessible to more than just those around you. And I think that's not always important for people when they create legacies, because in a way, the word legacy has been about perhaps the sustaining of a family's heritage or their values. And, you know, obviously in colonial times, that was not always for the betterment of those around them that they, you know, colonized. I think for me, I take words of the past and I turn them into things that I think can create harmony for myself and those around me, and provide inclusivity for the concepts themselves. And I think that's what's mostly what drove me, is that I was thinking, like, I was sitting around and I was thinking, like, are we building things that will create value exactly for the planet and our species in the long run? And I wasn't sure if I felt that about the social networks and such that we have today. And I wasn't sure if that was the way we were going with the ideas of automation for the workforce of tomorrow. So I was kind of like, okay, if 8 billion plus people and expanding of populations, and we're going to create this world that's maybe not going to have us working, who's going to decide who works, and who's going to decide who's getting this basic income that everyone talks about, and who's going to decide who decides what the basic income is? Because every time I talk to my friends who are like all about, you know, universal basic income, it was very hard for them to be like, I'm like, so you're going to live off that? And you're going to just be, you know, one of these people? Like, oh, no. I'm like, okay, so you're not actually going to be the person. So I think, you know, just thinking about like, what does it mean to create these kind of shifts in myself, in my own building, in my own thinking of the world that can be expanded for other people and their communities? Because obviously, being Californian, and even though I'm Asian, I'm still very Californian in some ways. I have a specific perspective of the world. And, you know, even with your heritage and being Swedish and, you know, European, you have a different perspective. And I think right now, today, the legacy of technology is being very much decided and narrated by a very American view of the world. And an American view of the world is not really something Finnish people actually need. You know, they have very good education there. So if I talk about education and the limitations of education, it's really important for me to recognize I'm talking about experiences I had in the United States. Because there are lots of places in the world that have great education right now. And we don't get to see them highlighted, because that doesn't serve the purpose of the countries that are leading the conversation. And so I think that's also really important to recognize when we talk about like legacy and development, is that idea of creating solutions for a species, which is us, like the human species, sustaining ourselves, but recognizing that sustaining ourselves is going to be different in Bangladesh, you know, in, you know, Namibia, and like places like, you know, New Zealand and Finland and Sweden, as well as the United States, you know? So I think that's really something I've recognized now, especially having read more about how waste is created in the United States and how waste is created from Dubai, where I just came back from. And then waste is created in places like Bangladesh and, you know, lots of other countries that have, you know, in the quote, global South, unquote. And so, yeah, I think asking questions for me is also about learning about how those questions would be answered by other people. Because how I ask the question and I see the response and the answer, it's obviously related to my life experiences. So that is, I think, the biggest journey for me that I think I've been on, is to understand how other people see legacy from their perspective. Because it's totally, you know, it's very case by case. And it's been, yeah, I think that's been really fascinating, talking to people in Nigeria, talking to people in South Africa, talking to a few ladies that live in, you know, a friend of mine in Bangkok. And then, you know, people I've met who, you know, have wealthy families, people who have families that are middle class, and some people who are kind of struggling. And just to understand, like, okay, how does that also play a role in that? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm listening to you here talking. I think, you know, what you're describing as you're talking to is this, you know, increasingly connected and increasingly global world. And it's so hard because all of a sudden we're not supposed to know just our local environment. We're supposed to know how the whole world is working in a way. At least the own pressure I put on myself is like, I want to be not only a good Swedish citizen, but a good global citizen. Mm-hmm. And because I'm so privileged here in Sweden, I want to make sure that somehow my actions lead to people in Nigeria or Bangladesh or Thailand also have a better life. And so, like, then, you know, we start getting into, like, so are we like one big global community? But then at the same time, we want to allow for all these individual expressions of partly the, like, individual person, but also like individual nations or individual ethnicities. So, like, and I think, like, that's where in a conversation like this, it's so easy to get overwhelmed too. And all of a sudden you realize how little you know, and all of a sudden you're thrown into despair and anxiety. And even like in the conversation you and I are having right now, I'm noticing my own mind tripping up, like, oh damn, where's the structure now? We were in Elon Musk in a room, and now we're talking about like Thailand and how different perspectives count for completely different realities. And if we don't account for these realities, we're actually speaking not truth when we say X or Y. So it's so overwhelming. So I'm actually thinking now, like, as I'm not sure if you feel the same sense of like, oh man, there's a lot of balls in there.
Yeah.
But I think like that's where I also like then to come back to the fact, okay, so like the world is that damn complex. Like, you've gone from Bangladesh to California and all these other countries, and then you studied at the San Francisco University and you kind of went into political science. You started looking at these structures. You were surrounded by technology and you were starting wondering, okay, how can I scale these ideas? And then you've done a bunch of different projects. It's so hard to take in. It's so hard to consume. And that's where I think, like, another thing that I'm really teaching myself as I have these conversations, as I start to try to understand the 21st century, is again this thing of, oh, to understand the world, I have to understand myself. To change the world, change yourself. And that's where I really like where, like, you kind of did it naturally just now, like you were mentioning all these topics and then you came back to in the end, but how does that make like Noreen feel? How does that, where does that inner, your inner happiness go?
Yeah.
And I'm curious then. So like looking back, like when you finished university and in your initial projects, did you feel like you got lost in the complexity of the world and this global connection?
No.
Had to find back to yourself? No.
No, I think that the reality is, I think, you know, when you say, I think the challenge we have as a species, and that's where technology really plays a role, is that, yes, I think, you know, for me, I don't feel lost in the diversity of lots of information. I think that's what's attractive about data, is that data is an opportunity for that complexity of information that we have out in the world to be aggregated and create a more synergistic way of giving us information. You know, data, raw data is much more even diverse and all over the place than even, you know, anything I've said today, right? And so, you know, that is, I think, what is more important, I think, than what we build, is for us to expand the data sets that we create that building with. You know, Elon Musk isn't telling us to only look at what he's building. That's just the way that we as a species are kind of connecting to these very few iconic groups of people. But there's lots of people building things in the world. You know, there's people building in China. Obviously, China's building a lot, whether you love it or not. And so it's important to be like, who are these people that can manage to build an entire train system in a blink of an eye almost of the time that, you know, some of the Western countries are taking to build those things? And who are these people who are building, you know, projects in Africa? Who are these people building projects in, you know, South Asia? Who are these other individuals who are obviously doing more than their average person? And I think, you know, if we could all work on just expanding, one, reading books, for example, I'm trying to read more books by women, getting more quotes of women. I realize that I'm so, you know, narrowed to the classics of that were given. And, you know, obviously Maya Angelou, she's a brilliant, beautiful writer. You know, I was happy she was introduced to me when I was in, you know, when I was still in high school. But that's because I'm in California, and I know that I had a lot of access to really brilliant teachers, as much as there were some obviously failed ones, that had a diverse literature experience because of where we are, which was a very diverse state. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's the person, which is me. I'm really grateful to be someone who completely is all over the place. Like, I am actually been for past year trying to put together some ideas of writing a book literally about being all over the place. And I think it's because I had been told that a lot growing up, and, you know, still, and I used to be like so uncomfortable with it. It was like, oh my God, this is like this negative word. Like, oh, I'm all over the place. How do I become concise? And then I started to really listen to what I'd said. And I was like, but that is actually the reality. There was a lot of different threads of information. And actually, the people who are concise, they're just, you know, even if they're like in one company and did the same thing for 10 years, there was probably ideally some other routes that they took in how they drove there, or like they maybe dated a few different people. You know, some people have literally been with the same person and the same job and so forth for like more than two decades of their life or something. But, you know, for this argument, I'm talking about the people who are a little more diverse in that, in their life decisions, because I'm probably not going to be able to relate to those people anyway. Mm. But, you know, when you look at that and you look at data, I think it's the reality is that for me, I think that's what's attractive to me about data, is that it allows all this stuff that I'm saying, all this qualitative data, to be put down, be quantifiable with other people's experiences, and be like, okay, so Nora wants to build this thing that's around legacy. Who is this other person who's using these words out in the world? And you can like actually use like social media and data analytics and find out who else is talking about similar things to you, and start looking at different groups of people and different types of people around the world. Mm. And I think that part of expanding the human collective mindset and consciousness is something I'm really attracted to right now. Mm. And yeah, I think absolutely. I think that's where I feel like I'm developing myself. It's just like, oh my gosh, centering myself into being like, okay, I'm just being with me. You know, I've done a lot of things. I've been all over the place. I've been literally, quote, all over the place, unquote. Mentally, physically, you know, juggling maybe too much, trying maybe too much. And then sitting in my own stillness and being like, okay, what matters? And when I come down to the essence of what matters to me, it's obviously like love and peace and human connection to the people that I love. You know, like to know that when I die, there'll be someone close to me, and all the people that I'm close to, I've been able to say that they mattered, and vice versa. And I think is the foundation of what made me realize, like, okay, so I don't really need much, right? Like, I was like, okay, I don't really need much to exist, but why have we put so much stuff out there? You know, like there's so much stuff out there. There's so much stuff on the internet. There's so much knowledge and so much noise, you know? And I think it's, again, because that journey, you know, I've been on this journey, but not, doesn't mean everyone else is going on this journey to be like really just owning like, okay, in the end of the day, I'm building the life that like the 90-year-old me, if I was to be on my deathbed, is like going to be satisfied with. And what does that look like? And let me work backwards from that. And I think that's a privilege in some ways.
And I really liked how you tied that together, because like, it's such an interesting dynamic. It's almost like a paradox of like, because I completely agree with you. I'm completely infatuated by this information stream, by this fact that with a device and connection, I go from local to global.
Beautiful.
And I'm surfing the world and I'm learning about all these different places and I'm able to talk to literally anyone. I've had conversations with people in Bali already, or in Germany, or wherever I want to go. If I can just find a person and we have, oh, you know what? We actually want to sit down and have a conversation. That's possible.
Yeah.
And we don't have to take a plane. We don't have to do. And that means that as long as we can have a conversation, you have one man on the ground, like, how does Elon do everything he does? Well, that's because he can be in California, but he can organize all around the planet and get resources from all around the planet to one place through all these different mutual connections. And so for me, that is awe-inspiring. And I think that's also like what I want to, you know, also just highlight, like, damn, life is so freaking exciting in the 21st century. That was not a pun, freaking 21st century freak. freaking exciting in the 21st century, because there is this endless potential. But I think what I was trying to say is like, where I got lost is like when you only stare at the potential and you forget the basics. When you forget that, like, oh, when I'm 90 at my deathbed, I want to make sure I've said I love you to my loved ones and that they can say I love you back. That's where I think so many people actually fail today. Because I think, like you're saying, most people are awe-inspired. Most people are attracted to all these fucking awesome ideas and awesome projects going on. But what we're like losing touch with, in a sense, is this human connection of love, compassion, openness, vulnerability, decency. Because we're forgetting to just reconnect to just breathing, sitting down for proper conversation, saying thank you for just everything. In a way, we lost our common decency because we're in such a big world and we're focusing on the individual and we're forgetting the community aspect, the smaller parts. And I think that now in this kind of 21st century, I think Alexandre Bot has a great point where we're going to return to these almost tribal relationships where we find a smaller set of people that we truly trust, that we truly love, that we truly care about. And we've probably found them through finding legacy together or these other buzzwords that we ourselves are interested in and combining a small group around that and becoming hyper loyal. But I think in that hyper-connected small group is where we will kind of remember that, oh shit, if I'm going to be with these people and build these awesome projects, then it's so important to not be flaky, to not be self-obsessed all the time, to actually sacrifice yourself for other people. And not like, so there's this push-pull between going global, but also coming smaller back to the fundamentals of how do we keep meaning in such a big, scary world? Well, that's again, through these tight, tight relationships. Would you say, like, I'm then curious, how would you say your social network looks like? Do you think it has developed in that way where like now you're all over the place? But if you look at your social network, is that all over the place? And then I don't mean just your acquaintances, because I'm sure you have hundreds, maybe even thousands. But how does it look just in your inner circle, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a few really close friends and we talk, you know, every month. And then I was just talking to a friend of mine about how, because I spent, you know, over a decade in San Francisco and I don't feel like as aligned with a lot of my friends' views of technology, I've been really thinking about how bizarre it is that there's certain people that are so, they have so much allegiance for certain these big companies, where you feel like their allegiance to big companies or their political views almost censors your ability to be honest to them. And in that respect, I do feel like there's certain friends of mine, the friends that I'm really close to, we're super unfiltered and we've known each other super spontaneously. One of my closest friends is someone I've known for over 12 years. And we go on like a holiday, like every year. We started like maybe 8 years ago when I was in Thailand. And I was just talking to him today and he was like planning the next thing we should go check out. And we met because when I lived actually after university, I lived half a year in Madagascar. And when I came back, I was living in LA very briefly. And I went to a museum and I like literally became friends with him because I accidentally hit him with the door of the museum. So, and we've been friends for over 12 years. And basically was like, hi, do you want to come over and have Chinese food with me and my friend? And he's this Belgian Dutch guy that was volunteering for the LA Film Festival. And, you know, we had no idea where our worlds would take us or what we would do for careers. And we've done different things. And, you know, he lives in London and now I live in Sweden and we've stayed in touch. He's definitely one of my closest friends still. And I have a couple of these kind of funny stories of how I've became friends with people. And we've stayed in touch over decades. And I think, yeah, they're my close network. And with them, like with him especially, we talk about, you know, how we can like co-own a house or something that's our holiday home. And then I have another friend that we talk about like how we can, you know, build a garden together, you know. And then I have, you know what I mean? I have these, I would say they're distributed.
Yeah.
Like the intention, but they're all like harmonize on this intention of something that we sustain together long, like beyond, you know, a few years. Because obviously if you're going to buy a summer home, you're going to hopefully go to there more in your life. And yeah, so I think I still want to expand, you know, I want to expand my network. I don't believe in just being friends with the people you've known for the first 20, 30 years of your life. I think that's the beauty of the internet. I think it's making people that are older also who might have like felt really stuck in their small like villages or cities find like-minded people in other parts of the world for better or worse.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think the main thing is the beauty of the internet is when it helps people find others like-minded based on love and a healthy mindset. The negative aspect of the internet, which is extremely worth mentioning in this day and age, is when it cultivates connections and almost cult behavior with people on negative commonalities, which it's been doing also, unfortunately. So I think that for me, I'm obviously interested in the first, which is the idea of like, you know, us meeting and just, you're like, oh, this is cool. Like we have two friends in common or whatever, or no friends in common, but you're passionate about gardening and I'm passionate about gardening. And let's, you know, you do your garden in Spain and I do my garden in, you know, location X, Y, and we all can be friends. And I love that about like these Facebook groups I've been to. Mm. And, you know, I mentioned Clubhouse to you.
Yeah.
This app that I've been using for voice chats. I made some great friends on there. They're going to come visit me here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I got a Clubhouse, but I haven't tried it out very much.
Yeah, I mean, it was really amazing in the beginning because there weren't that many people still, like, it was still growing.
Yeah, they did a good job with the hype. It was like you got three invites per installed app, and so you had to wait for an invite. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's great because it's expanded me to meet some people. Because I think I've said this to you before when we met in person, is that I've been really struggling to meet like-minded people in Sweden. And so I think it was really great. I connected with these people that are in California and Atlanta and then UK and even, you know, I think I made friends with someone in Tokyo, you know, through this app and met some people in Dubai via Clubhouse. So it's been really great in that expansion. And it, so I think it's in that respect, I loved it. But I recognize that, again, it's about that inner work. Because if I was coming at, if I had maybe connected on the, what I said, which is it was hard to make friends here. If that was the sole conversation, I mean, I don't feel like that's what I expanded on the conversation with them, then perhaps I would have met people who also felt lonely. You know?
Yeah.
And that's not the beauty of the connection. It should be about what we want to see thriving.
Yeah.
I think if you expand, if the conversation about technology, like I said, a lot of people are like, oh, it's broken, X, Y, Z. I recognize rather than obsess on that conversation, I'm about the expanding. What else is the potential of technology? What is, you know, the IoT, Internet of Things? How do we use tangible products that are technology that support, you know, blind people to expand their ability to experience the world? Haptic things allows people who maybe suffer from other challenges in sensory to connect to other people. You know, I think that's the beauty of living in Silicon Valley is that when the magic of it was the artists and the technologists connecting and the technologists not being the dominant conversation.
Yeah.
Because when I went to university, I went to actually university in USF, is a Jesuit school. It was, you know, it was still the early days. Google wasn't that big yet. You know, we would still be like, ooh, maybe we'll go out with a guy in Google. We could get free lunch because we were like high school, you know, high school, I said, university kids looking for a free meal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think like you said, I think nothing has changed in what we want in the world. I think there's certain people who've always looking for intimate collaboration and some people will want to know the entire, you know,
yeah, because there's so many different personalities as well. Yeah, yeah. Of course, there's not one set model. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think for me, it's about making sure that I'm not choosing something just on growing older. Because there's this feeling you get when you're getting older that maybe you're closing your network. And I was like, no, I want to look at the most inspiring 80-year-old types. You know, those architects that are still, you know, talking on podcasts and such.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, that's the kind of human I want to be because they're also very much humans. And I think that's really helped me in life is to look at the most weird, still thriving older generations and having that knowledge to always look for the older generations. I think is really something I'm very thankful for that I gained from having lived with my grandparents and fostering that even where I live. The first house I lived in when I moved to Sweden was with a woman who was 90 and she was the biographer for any of the Swedish people and you of August Strindberg.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I told you. And she's got a Wikipedia page and she just was so full of life. She was more lively than some of the 20-year-old Swedish people I met here.
Yeah.
And so I realized when people say, oh, Swedish people don't talk to them in people or da-da-da, they'd give me these stereotypes. I was like, well, there's a 90-year-old lady I'm living with and she's like got her friends she goes out with and she's calling me her, you know, she says to me, you're like my grandkid. Aww. And I, you know, and I look nothing like her. And she's so positive on immigration, so positive about new people. So having lived with someone like her, I say, you know, that is the beauty of life. You will find positive, expansive, truly open-minded, curious people, even in your city or beyond. You just have to be manifesting that energy. Absolutely.
And that's also so interesting. Like you say, this is like about manifesting energy too. When we create these icons, like you said, like Elon Musk in a room is actually just a normal dude. Yeah. But Elon Musk in media is this god.
Absolutely.
Mythological god.
I mean, he looks stunning. Can I tell you, when I read about him, I'm like, everyone probably wants to marry him. I'm sure no one's talking about it, but I'm sure there's a whole queue of women blog about how do we marry a Elon Musk. I'm sure.
Yeah. And I think that people forget. I feel like it's almost like in the same way where like the porn industry has led to like the pleasure levels of men has gone so high that they now struggle to get an erection. It's the same thing here a little bit, where like the pleasure levels of looking at somebody like Musk manifesting his life is so high that you lose sense of how you manifest your own life too. Mm. When you kind of forget to kind of go into the core and start kind of racing after those interests that you have. Like, even if it's computer games, even if it's playing the guitar, if it's drawing, whatever it is, if it's making a garden.
Yeah.
I think we also underappreciate how you kind of create life and how you create that kind of manifestation. Like, I was having a podcast with a guy called Billy Ehrenfeld. Okay. And, you know, he's like a sound healer. And one thing he said that I really liked is, you know, like wherever you put your attention grows. And I think that's also like so huge, is like a lot of what I'm hearing from what you're saying is also like you're finding places to put your attention. And now it's been legacy a lot. And how can we create a planet that's flourishing? How can we create humans that are flourishing? Legacy. And the more time you spent on focusing on legacy, that has like branched out to this network where you now you're working at different projects. And it's the same thing I feel with like this podcast. Mm. It started with like, how can I understand the 21st century? And I started putting attention on that. And then I tried to understand all this global big stuff. And I feel overwhelmed sometimes. And then I came back into me. And then I was like, okay, who is Edward? And then I've like lately noticed I freaking love that sound healing too. And I do my voice. He uses a bowl and more meditation. What I do all the time, I just sit in a room with both men and women. And and you know, at the beginning I was like, this is so freaking weird. Like, why do I enjoy doing this so much? But then, you know, if I would have been like looking at the prestige economy, like, oh wait, I shouldn't invest my time here, I probably would have stopped. Mm. But now I've spent a lot of time and attention on it. And now I'm starting to realize all these things about singing that I had no idea about. So like, I've always liked meditation. I've liked yoga. I've liked kind of these esoteric practices. So I'm like, okay. But that one happened when I started singing. I'm going to actually go down this rabbit hole. So first with meditation, it's a lot about, you hear about, okay, disattaching your ego. Mm. Okay. So that you can do, you can kind of try to still your thoughts or observe them rather than put too much energy onto them. Mm. But then there's also like, yeah, you want to disattach from the ego. But another thing you want to do is you really want to make sure to feel what it is you're feeling right now without blocking it out.
Yeah.
So it's in one way ignoring, but it's also one way fully focusing on whatever is now. Mm. And then with the singing added as the third layer there, because like you often enter a very meditative state when you do it, because you're breathing, it's, you fall into a pattern, it becomes very rhythmic, it becomes meditative, is all of a sudden you're in a room with 12 other people doing the same tone, and then you start resonating together. And then you can almost start feeling the vibrations in your body is connecting to the vibrations in your body. And then again, I was running into this, I am as you are. Oh shit. We're so similar as people. And da, 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 da. Yeah. And I just want to like, and that has opened up this whole world for me of kind of like quantum physics. How is it that a particle can be in one place and at another place at the same time, but yet not? And in the same way, when we almost feel emotions, it's almost something that we're like, almost like when you're in flow with somebody, when you're in rapport with somebody, it's almost, that's what's happening too. It's almost like your emotion is entering that person's body and it's constantly in flux between each other shared. And I don't know, what I'm trying to get to is like, it's starting to expand my way of looking at my relationships with other people. And that when I started looking at how my relationships with other people expand, I just want to talk to more people to create more relationships and more connection. Now I'm getting lost in my ramble. But what I was trying to say is just like, I love this idea that we're getting to, is like where you put your attention, it grows.
Totally.
And if you put your attention on your life and your interests, it will also grow. We've also mentioned now, like you want to read more books by women. And one book I just started reading is The Moment of Lift by Melinda Gates.
Okay, yeah.
And just speaking about the kind of woman empowerment. But there's one question in there, in the book that I got, that I thought was so good. And it was, what do you know deeper now that you thought you knew before?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's that I'm going to be okay. You know, I think when you're younger, you're kind of told you're going to be okay. And it's kind of like, you're like, okay. And then you question it. And then you're like, realize, okay, you're still okay. You know, like you've managed, like you took an effort, and whatever doesn't, you know, they say whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it doesn't always feel like you're stronger. You know, there's definitely, you know, if you have a breakup or you have a person that dies in your life, or you mm-hmm. have this job you thought was going to be forever and doesn't work out, or mm-hmm. anything, you know, any type of loss of people and things and so forth, you may question it, you know. Even like, you know, hearing people talk about what they went through when they lost an arm or a leg or something, the journey to going from like feeling like a victim of it or feeling discouraged in life, and then thinking, okay, yeah, I can get beyond that, and then being quote, okay, unquote, you know. I think recently I realized like, yeah, I feel I'm going to be okay. And it's a real like deeper feeling of knowing it. And even if, you know, even in the moments where I might be sad or I might not feel sure about the direction of the tension and journey I'm creating for myself, especially when you want to do things that are different and you're kind of pioneering a way of looking at something for yourself and others, I think it's really important to remind yourself that, hey, it's an experiment, and whatever happens, as long as you don't get killed doing it, you're going to be okay. You know, if you're alive, you're going to be okay. And it's such a simple thought, but I think I deeper understand that now, is this idea that there's no real right or wrong way of living if it's coming from a place of obviously not creating harm for others and yourself.
Hmm.
It's just different ways of living and different ways of success and different ways of existing. And I think that's what's beautiful about being a human, is that we do have different ways. And that's why I really push back on all the automation and all the ways that only technology companies are creating the narrative of the future, because they're not artists, they're not sound healers, they're not sometimes even physicists and scientists. And that's a different world. And maybe, you know, gardeners probably still want to touch gardens because that feeds their soul. And I think if people were to really sit and do things from being okay, I don't think we would actually want to build a lot of the things we do, for better or worse. I think there's a lot of things that are built by countries where they feel a scarcity mindset. And so we have these giant phallic skyscrapers, because I'm sure a bunch of dudes felt really like they needed bigger,
I'm sure,
bigger parts in their bodies, you know? And, you know, and so there's, and I, do I, am I, I love some of them. I love these like giant skyscrapers. It's looking at them, but I feel like we should recognize that we don't probably need always so many of everything, you know? And I think that balance, of what we need as a species, as a as an individual, you know, it starts with the individual, and you look and you expand. You know, for me, deciding to work from a place of figuring out how to balance myself and own being okay with myself and being okay with that I will mess up, I am imperfect, and I am as lost as probably many people out there are. Like we all have a level of being lost till we find whatever it is. And, you know, maybe that's when nirvana truly happens.
Yeah.
But recognizing that that's great, but also the humility to recognize like someone like Elon Musk or, you know, Bill Gates or Sheryl Sandberg or, you know, them finding that balance impacts a lot of people's lives. Because if they were less greedy about how they saw their needs, if they were thinking less about how to optimize their taxes for being trillionaires, then there would be a lot less that they needed to give back, because they probably should never have had that much in some ways. And you know, I think that's something that is the idea of like knowing you can have everything. And just deciding you don't need as much. That I think is something that is because you don't want to be overwhelmed when you think about it. When you think about being okay, you're like, okay, you know, like you can have everything. You could, you know, the internet has taught you can be everywhere all the time. And knowing, like I personally know for myself, saying I'm going to make an honest attempt to always choose all physical interactions over any person on the internet. And I've realized I've been doing that more and more because we, you and I, we're privileged to not be in a lockdown like other people. You know, and that freedom we have here, I recognize because I come from a country like United States where people are still in lockdown, still struggling how to connect with people. And they're so thirsty, that's the right word, I feel, for interaction on the internet. And when they talk to me, I sense it, you know, like wanting to know me, you know, romantically and friendly, like ways. But I also am like, I see you, I recognize that, but also know that I have the luxury subconsciously to go meet people in real life. And spontaneously land in a park and say hi to someone. And I want to enjoy that as the beauty of being here now, present in this country, in Sweden, in Stockholm. And I think that's because I know a little more about how to balance myself from that word. Okay. You know, like being great is super great. Like I still want to thrive to be great. To first start with being okay. Is the stability of it's a foundation that allows us to not go down into a pit when we fail at something in greatness. You know, I think a lot of people that are really critical of themselves is because they're building the world in their greatness without being okay. Because then if they were to, when they fall, it would fall at like a bed, at like a mattress of this word okay, versus into a hole of void. You know, and you can feel that sometimes in you know when you hear about people attempting to take their lives and such, when they when the stock market crashes or when their businesses fail or their, you know, XYZ doesn't work as they planned. And I think I can only speak for my own self. I think in my life, I have been in a point where I thought I was not okay. And to build above that and then feel like sorrow, I felt more like I could see why existing didn't feel as important. But now I look at that same self, you know, and that's why I now have a deep understanding of the word okay, because I think when people then said you're going to be okay, I generally didn't think so. And when you're a social people, that people will just assume you will be okay. But if you don't believe it yourself, then I think you don't value your life. You don't value existing and continuing to live. But I think I was in a very, very dark place once in my life. And I remember these 24 hours so vividly because I was so alone in my place. I lived with a bunch of people. It was around Christmas time when everyone goes through their darkest periods in a lot of parts of the world. And it was one of the roughest years I'd ever had. But to be honest, not even that rough compared to years I've had since. But I felt like completely not okay and completely like, what's the point of existing? And I remember saying, if tomorrow happens, then I'm going to recognize I'll be okay. But I was really struggling to continue having a tomorrow. And I think about that now in this moment, because no one's actually asked me this question. I think that's why that is the most deepest knowledge for me, is knowing I am going to be okay, because owning that I will be okay allows all the other even worse scenarios to happen, and for me to fall but be even feeling extreme pain and suffering inside, and, you know, tear up, weep it out, whatever, breathe it out, you know, breathe it out, because I know I will be okay.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Beautifully expressed. Yeah. And it's so fascinating because I think, you know, I can really relate to the idea of like when you're riding an incredible wave of momentum and flow, and you're like, you just feel like unstoppable, indestructible.
Mm.
And then sometimes things happen where the rug is just pulled off your feet. And kind of all of a sudden, like being you is not enough. Being you is not okay. And that is, I think, like without that, it's also, I feel like if we can accept that, like whatever we are right now is okay too, that's when I think like it becomes extremely hard to like you say, to cherish existence, to cherish life, to actually believe that, you know what, the world is good. We can do good things. Because it's almost like, you know, you start projecting your feelings of yourself onto all these other things. And very quickly, you're in like a really fucking dark, dark, dark hole. But also like realizing that being okay is being in that dark hole. That's what I think you finished with so beautifully. Where it's like sometimes you have to just weep. You have to be in that dark sadness. Like shit. Ah, yeah. Like it's almost like clinging to your bones, the sadness. Yeah. And yet have that inner whisper. It's okay. And I think like if I wanted to toot my own horn, I think that that's a little bit what I think when I compare myself to my older brother, who I have a super, super close relationship with. Cause like he is, if I feel a little bit all over the place, sometimes he is, you know, on another stratosphere and the other galaxy. And while he's super powerful in these other galaxies, and he has perspectives sometimes that maybe I can't understand, and he very often has a teaching role with people when he meet them, and he'll question Elon Musk, he'll question Bill Gates, he'll question any person, realizing he's the idiot. He also sometimes maybe struggles with, am I okay? And I think that one that you're saying now, it's like, yeah, I'm going to play this episode for him. I'm curious, at least this segment. Very strong. It landed really hard on me, or like in a good way. It really landed.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm a visual person, which I think most people are like, men are more visual than women or something, but I'm definitely a visual person. And for me, the word okay is a mattress, you know? It's the mattress that holds me from a hole in the ground, a pit that has no end and doesn't recognize that existence needs to exist for me. And I think a lot of people, especially in this time, they're isolated in their homes or isolated in their minds more than anything. Can feel like if they don't have that mattress of okay in them, they can feel like really drawn to just fall into that dark pit that has no real reasoning for us to exist. And I think that's why I think having that foundation of okay and really cultivating it in ourselves has so much importance, you know, and knowing it doesn't have, like you said, it's a thin mattress. it's not a Tempur-Pedic. It's just getting you through, you know. It's a type of mattress that, you know, it's the barrier between believing in a tomorrow and not. And I think that is a simple intention to put your mind into, but it's a very powerful intention that cultivates us to exist.
Yeah.
You know, and for us, you and I think we are dreamers. We have lots of visions of expanding and creating greatness. It's interesting to me how many, you know, people that I didn't expect to take their lives or, you know, suffer from depression, that were really brilliant, but also like people who just didn't matter in so many people's select, you know, groups and were suffering mental illnesses. And I think that I look at these different varying kinds of people and I see that how their lives can be influenced by harmful, you know, drugs or harmful people. And I think I'm just grateful for, like, that's why I think that question is so, something I'm so grateful for having put thought into, is just really deeply owning it and having that mantra of, I will be okay. It's not something that means that that's all I want to be. But on the darkest days in your life, you are so grateful. I'm so grateful that it's so much, it's a thicker mattress than it was that one dark day in, you know, during Christmas time. And I think that, you know, that mattress is getting more like Tempur-Pedic in a way for me. And so it is, you know, and I think it's crazy because I mean, I've really taken so many crazy risks since past year or so. And I'm so sometimes lost on how everything's going to develop in my future for myself and question what I want to build. And then I'll just meet people who they'll be like, no, we need this from you. We need you to do these things. And you realize, like, especially us who are dreamers and visionary types, who think about expansion and want to put out in a way other people want to hear that because they need that statement. Because someone said you're going to be okay, and many people said it to me at some point. And those people, maybe, you know, my voice will be the sound in their mind, and they won't remember me. But just like those people, that I don't remember exactly when the words "you will be okay" really held real meat in my mind, but it came from all these different voices. And I think that's the power of each of us, you know, our individual struggles and how we expand from that and grow and create a deeper knowledge of one thing that cultivates and grows us to thrive beyond our challenges is a message to someone else that needs that, you know. So how can they create that mattress? You know, how can they have that feeling of something between them and a hole in the ground that takes them from existing in themselves? And I think that's the power of our species, is that we influence each other.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is the, for all the better and worse, I like to contribute to the bettering of our species. And it's super hard, you know, because there's so many moments I want to just be one of those other people that are like, F this and F that. And yeah, these people suck. And that really did fucking suck, you know? But then I'm like, I want to put out the ray of light.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's super important, especially like, I mean, like my name literally means light.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
So Noreen comes from the Arabic word Nur, and Nur in Arabic means light. So I think in a way, it kind of connects back to my gratitude for my parents, because, you know, you don't choose your name and you don't really know how it's going to affect you. And how it's going to create what draws you and draws others to you. And I feel like really grateful because their choice of my name and the way I showed up in the world and where I've been gifted with these amazing people to connect with has cultivated this desire for me to always go towards expansion. And, you know, that's what light does. It's just expands, and it's I think that's really, I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, it's a good name for you. And I don't know, I think I would just kind of want to end this with I just really want to say thank you. Because especially with, like, I feel like after this conversation, I actually also more understand the idiot that Dostoevsky is writing about after this conversation. Because, like, one thing with this podcast that I sometimes struggle with is, like, I feel like because I have a podcast and because I know people are listening, I feel like I have to have an answer. But, like, to be completely honest, the only answer I have is this: I am as you are, are being here now. I'm amazing. You're amazing. We're all amazing. That's the only thing I know for sure. That's the only thing I know for sure. It's the only thing. And the rest is just me kind of being the idiot, trying to figure it out, like realizing, okay, there's a pattern there. There's a pattern there. And sometimes I think I don't feel strong in that, because I feel like, oh, I should be that decisive, direct, ready with the answers kind of person, because I have a podcast, I'm talking about the 21st century, and because I read about it all the time, I should know everything about it. But I don't know, I just feel super humbled. I feel like I'm okay.
Yeah, you're okay, I'm okay. That's why we're here today, is that we chose to be okay with ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, on Instagram, I try to do it every day. I mean, when I get tired of social media, I don't do it every day. But yeah, I do a story where I say, I'm amazing, you're amazing, we're all amazing. But I'm definitely going to start throwing in, I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay. We're all okay. That's a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I had no idea. It's my first, I guess, official podcast interview I've done. So I appreciate you taking time to choose me. And I always, I started this inner peace room in Clubhouse, and I always say, thank you for choosing yourself and choosing to come and spend your time here with me. And,
nice.
And, cause I think when we listen to each other, we learn about ourselves most of the time. We're listening to learn something about our own self or how to cultivate ourselves. So really appreciate you telling me to come here, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Awesome. And whoever's listening.